Hello, everybody, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 17 of Rift Happens. I'm Justin, joined by my co-host, Lucas, and we have an information-packed Season 2, Episode 17, full of Tier 2 information, Tier 3 information, Tier 1, with a special look at two matches that occurred during the past week in Tiers 2 and 1. But before we get into all of that, I have to ask, Lucas, how was your week?
It was really nice. Besides what we're going to get into later, my unfortunate performance in our Tier 1 game. But I got to go home for Father's Day, had a blast. It was nice. I've had a good week.
You can blame that loss on me. I predicted the show with
this. I think, as we will see, my performance is probably a little more to blame. I don't know if we can say much more about that. Like, it was rough. We'll see the scoreline later.
Yes, we will. I've got a whole slide. My week was fine. Our dishwasher died like 2 days ago. Ooh. So I had to go buy a new dishwasher today. You get what you pay for. So I didn't want something that was going to die in a year or two. So I had to fork out some extra money, and that was very unfortunate. But yeah, I had Father's Day. This year for Father's Day, I received a tea infuser set.
Ooh.
And a collection of like loose leaf teas, like black, green, and herbal. So to give everybody some backstory, I have stopped drinking adult beverages for a multitude of reasons, one of those being health, but yeah, many reasons. So my substitute in lieu of adult beverages is our teas. Because I like to be able to try different flavors and explore and experiment with different things. And I've got this really cool like infuser set. I could put the loose leaf tea into it and it has to seep, and I can flip it and it does like little raindrops into the bottom jar. It's pretty dope. I'm super excited. I've never been more excited about tea in my life. And it's not like Southern sweet tea, right? Yeah. It's not like syrup. This is like legit tea. So nice. So that's kind of my new thing.
What is your favorite kind of tea? Like,
I really like black tea. That's kind of my thing. I still drink black coffee, but I really like black tea. I've got one that has, it's called like Black Forest Cake, but it has like chocolate and berries. It's a black tea, so it's like super caffeinated, but it tastes like a chocolate cake. It's insane. So nice. Yeah. So right now that one's pretty good. And then like two nights ago, I had this herbal tea that was called Sweet Dreams, and legit, I finished drinking it and probably like 15 minutes later, I felt like I was going to pass out. So, I'm going to be using, I've got some for energy. I've got some for focus. I've got some for like digestion and inflammation. And then I've got some that are going to make me pass out. So that's awesome. but either way, that's enough of that. Oh, and I've been spamming Tarek. We talked about that a little bit in pre-show, and Tarek is giga busted right now, so that's going to be my solo queue pick for everybody right now, is start spamming Tarek, because nobody else plays him and it's easy to get S's on him. I just hit mastery 7 on him today. Nice. Easy peasy. But we are Season 2, Episode 17. Let's just hop right into this, because we've hinted at a few things that we're going to be talking about today, and I can't wait to get into it. But before we get into everybody, I guess the big question and the no undefeated teams in Tier 1, we're going to start with Tier 3, and we have their standings this week. So last week, we're a little lacking. We upped our production game this week. Things look a lot better. So here are your Tier 3 standings after 2.5 weeks of play, because one of the matches last week had to be rescheduled. We've got Dude Where's My R tied with Emotional Damage, both undefeated at 2-0. Mid Lane Runners coming in third at 1-2, and CC Does It at 0-3. These, I will say, even though we don't get to see Tier 3 play on stream, I'm going to go ahead and give them the award for the most creative names.
I agree. I mean, we've got a couple good ones, but in the other tiers, but I feel like these are all consistently solid.
So give us the give us the story behind your team name. Give us the Let Us Win name.
Oh, we had a so we had a few options, but really only one of them was legit. We had a couple that were very funny and creative and clever, but definitely would not have passed the PG rating for Coach Rivals. So we ended up with Let Us Win. We thought it was clever and maybe a little I don't know, maybe a little tongue in cheek. Yeah. It helps that we also have a player whose last name is Win, so it just kind of fits there. So
nice. Well, although I do agree that it's creative, I don't think it's as great as our tier three team names. These are great.
These are solid. I mean, they're very good. Do you have a personal favorite from tier three?
I really like Emotional Damage, because that's like one of my favorite memes on TikTok.
I agree. I think my top two are Emotional Damage and CC Does It. I love mid lane runners, and they're all good, but definitely Emotional Damage and CC Does It.
Yeah, for sure. And that's Gnar too. That is totally scarred. He's crying his eyes out.
Oh yeah.
But this tie for first place is going to be broken here in Team Three, because Dude Where's My R and Emotional Damage are going to be hitting the Rift, facing off against each other tomorrow night. That match is not streamed, and there are no bans in Tier Three, which takes us into kind of our I don't have their graphics for their standings, but their pick rate and stuff. I thought that I put all that in, but I could pull it, but they have no bans, so it's just picks. So we don't have a lot of data there for them. It's strictly just pick data. But I was almost certain that I created a graphic for that. I could have been mistaken. But either way, here are our tier three stat leaders. We do have Devoid 555 topping the stat charts in the top lane, followed by I Am Athlete in the jungle. We have Keyworking in the mid lane. We have Careless Wanderer in bot. And Mr. Fries, because I cannot pronounce his full name, in the support role. And representation from every single team in Tier 3. So I like it.
Yeah, I do too. I did pick out a couple of the stats to highlight, because some of them are super impressive on their own from each little side. I really like Devoid with the 10 solo kills across two games. Averaging 5 solo kills a game, that's pretty nuts. We don't have anything near that level. Well, actually, we might have that after Pathfinder's shellacking that he gave us. But we'll see.
You were there. You had 5 solo kills.
I think I gave up that stat this week. Then Athlete, which is what I'm assuming is going to be the highest kill participation in the league at 75%. Very, very impressive. And then I see you looking down at your keyboard. Also Keyworking with a 37 KDA, which to me screams very few deaths, which is very impressive. I don't know if to me, that has to be only having died once max throughout the entire league, right?
That is dying zero times.
Zero times.
Keyworking has 20 kills, zero deaths, and 17 assists across two games.
That is incredibly impressive. Very, very impressive. That's awesome. Also sharing the highest average CS death at 10 with Careless Wanderer. They're both at 22.8 CS differential, which is crazy at 10 minutes. Yeah. I mean, that's a couple thousand gold easy, right? Then we've got Careless Wanderer with a 36% damage share.
That's massive.
It is massive. He's pumping out the damage down there. Very, very impressive. And then additionally, we have our very wonderful, I think probably tied for my favorite Coach Rivals picture. We've got Herr Fritz, which pretty much is cleaning up every single vision stat. Like he's my vision monarch for tier three. Definitely making sure that everybody knows where their lane opponents are, where the jungler is, etc. on his team. So great job.
Yeah, for sure. And to give everybody an idea of how impressive these stats are, every role has 7 stats that are tracked amongst the players. So 7 stats for top lane, 7 different stats for jungle, et cetera, et cetera. And when you take a look at Devoid, Keyworking, Careless Wanderer, and Mr. Fries, they're in support lane, they're dominating 6 of the 7 stats. So there's still one more player out there in those roles. So Amianitas, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, for mid lane runners, is holding down the other stat in the top lane. Very Dirty Hair has 8 solo kills in the mid lane for mid lane runners as well. And then PCS Device, also with mid lane runners, is bringing in highest damage gold in the bot lane. And then Shaka Walls Fell for emotional damage is taking that 7th stat for support. So although these players are really showcasing everything that they have, there's still one more player in that role that's keeping them from having a full sweep of every single stat. So be interested to see. Listen, I have no more room on my graphic. Okay. So y'all can't like dominate all 7 stats. I have nowhere to put them. So I either need y'all to dial it back a little bit, stop being so good, or I need the rest of the league to really target these players and make sure that they full on int in their next game, so that the next graphic, I don't have everything that's full. It's going to look more like athletes, where it's like 3 stats instead of like 6. But Devoid 555, want to shout him out, also has a perfect KDA. I'm going to pull that up real quick. Sitting at 24 kills and 7 assists.
Nice.
Whereas Keyworking is at the 20 and 17. So, yeah. So, we have 2 players there in Tier 3 that are absolutely deathless. And emotional damage does play tomorrow. They've actually got a doubleheader tomorrow night to catch up on their Week 3 matchup and their Week 4. So, we'll see if they can remain deathless. That's going to be the challenge. We'll see what they can do. So moving on, Tier 2 did complete all 3 weeks of their play. So these are the final standings after the first round robin. We do have Poro Snacks sitting undefeated at 3-0, the perfect first round robin. Congratulations to them. Followed by in second place, Valhalla back at 2-1. In third place, right behind them, is Triforce Tryhards at 1-2. And then finishing out our standings for Tier 2 is Legends of the Rift at 0-3. So no ties in Tier 3, Lucas.
No ties. Very impressive.
Yeah, we like no ties. Makes the stats cleaner. here are our stat leaders for Tier 2 while we take a look. And representation from 3 out of the 4 teams. Legends of the Rift had a little bit of a role shakeup, swap from mid to support. So, although some of their players are some stat leaders, they don't dominate the stats for these particular roles. So that's where we're going to have these players highlighted there. But we have Coach Dubs from Valhalla back in the top lane. We have Swoko for Poro Snacks in the jungle. Jubilus and Merlin in mid and bot for Triforce Tryhards. And Coach Mustang for support from Poro Snacks, topping the stat charts. Lucas, what do you think?
Well, one thing that I think is really interesting is that there's only, 2 of these teams are have multiple representatives. We've got Poro Snacks with Swoko and Coach Mustang, with Swoko just absolutely dominating the jungle stats. So definitely with a particularly impressive game last week that I got to watch live on the Diana. So it doesn't look like the losing Shyvana every single game is impacting him too much. And then Coach Mustang, as usual, with some stellar vision control. But our third place team with Triforce Tryhards still managing to have 2 people in some very impactful roles up there on mid and bot for stat leading. So I don't know. I'm interested to see, especially after my new role assisting them, whether we can see if they can keep that up and get some dubs to go along with their stats. So we'll see.
Or if they completely drop out of the stats since you...
Why would you say that to me? Why would you say that to me? Cannot believe you.
Yeah, so Swoko definitely had a monster performance on the Diana last week. We'll actually kind of dive into that a little bit here in just a moment. which was really helping. Jubilus still riding that wave from that initial Diana game week one. He's stacked his stats so hard week one, even though they've lost their two subsequent games after that. That was such a standout performance. He's still holding strong in the mid lane with these stats, but you notice it's only three of them. So he's on the cusp of losing it. So I'm looking for a bounce back performance from Jubilus this coming week as they take on Legends of the Rift. Merlin as well, seven is his highest killing spree. That is not like that's not a septa kill. That is just, he got seven kills before he ended up dying. So while he was alive. So that is a stat that we're tracking only for bot laners. But a really high CS per minute. Is leading in CS differential at 10 minutes. But when, you know, he had that really strong Jhin game in week two against Valhalla back, ended up getting a triple kill really early, which was pretty insane, and then set him on this trajectory to be this absolute monster for the rest of that game. Unfortunately, they weren't able to capitalize and pull off the win there, but still some really strong performances from him. And I do want to kind of circle back to top lane. Coach Dubs, eight solo kills, 7.10 average CS per minute. He's right up there with kind of Coach Magros. Coach Magros is going to have that high CS per minute because he's dedicated pretty much all of his Coach Rivals games to split pushing. So they're kind of going back and forth here in the stats. But this week, Coach Dubs able to snag four of the seven stats and take the lead there. Other standout performances in the mid lane that aren't representative here, but we do only see the three stats there. We also have Bulldog Mentor and Cleaner 556 both showing up. Bulldog Mentor at 39.46% damage percentage from the mid lane, which is pretty insane. You also have Nyxus from Valhalla back with the highest KDA. Slipstream with the highest CS per minute. He's been playing a lot of Kayle, and he had the game on Mordekaiser as well. So stats in the mid lane, very highly contested. And Jubilus has got to do some work to hang on to it. He's had it for 3 weeks in a row now. We'll see if he can hang on to it going into next week. So, but Jubilus is a player that usually likes to play assassins. That's what we see tend to be banned towards him, correct?
Yes. Yeah. I was trying to look at their bans from last week, but I want to say that he got hit with two in the first rotation, and they were all assassins, but I don't know for sure. I had that information the other day and didn't.
Okay. Well, speaking of bans, let's take a look at what tier two is kind of prioritizing in that ban. The most picked champions, there are three most picked champions. That's going to be Garen, Sejuani, and Zyra. Those are really dominating the picks at 66.67%. We've seen Sejuani in the jungle. We've also seen Black Beetle 13 play Sejuani top. And Zyra, of course, Coach Magros is playing Garen like every single week. And then Zyra in the bot lane. Tell us a little bit about this. Why is Zyra this contested pick here in Tier 2?
So I think, especially with the transition this season from, off-tank / engage supports, we're seeing a lot of enchanters. And Zyra is not really an enchanter, but she kind of fits into the same slot. She's not going to be your off tank. She's going to provide you a good amount of crowd control, but also dealing a lot more damage than a lot of your enchanters. So very similar to Lux, sometimes you get to see that support player really top the damage charts, maybe even snag a bunch of kills on the way. So I think it's just a pick that fits into the current meta with a lot of agency. So it's just a fun pick to kind of play. So,
yeah, for sure. A lot of zone control, and she can do a ridiculous amount of damage too. When I would play Zyra when I would go support, and it was not uncommon for me to be topping the damage charts as a support. And then of course you have to do the obligatory in post game chat in quotes, support champ with the most damage in the game, because she does. I mean, you build Leandre's on her, And so not only does she blow up squishies because of just these high base damages, and then you add in flat pin, but Liandry's, she can shred tanks. You get Liandry's demonic, and then you're doing, you know, percent health damage to the tanks, and it's really difficult for them to stay alive. So a strong pick here in tier two. We'll see who else is able to pick it up. Win rates. Here's our champions that have the highest win rate, and you know, I'll kind of let you deduce from information from there, but some of these picks have only been played one time. I think the Zac has been played once. I don't even remember anybody picking Varus, but apparently Varus has a win, so good good on whoever picked Varus. I do have a comment about the most banned for Tier 2. The most banned is incorrect here. But it's not my fault. It's the tier two players' fault. So
how dare they?
Let me soapbox for a second. All right. So the way we pull stats is thanks to Mr. Will Wynn, hooked us up with some coding that'll pull directly from the Riot API. It pulls the game data. So when you go through draft law, if you are banning certain champions in draft law, and then you get into champ select for your match and you ban different champions than what you banned in draft law, those will be the champions that go into the data. So if you're like, well, nobody banned Aatrox and nobody picked Aatrox, I'm just going to ban Aatrox because it doesn't matter. It does matter, my friend. It matters for the stats. And so our our spreadsheet is wrong now. We should have four most banned champions: Tristana, Lilia, Ashe, and Shyvana. Those are your 50% most banned. So I need everybody that is a competitor in tier two or tier one, when you go into champ select, make sure you're banning the same champions that you actually banned in draft law, because I can't manually override the API. The spreadsheet doesn't like that. So anyways, that being said, here are your four. I'm only going to show the three, and that's just because I'm making a statement here. But there are four most banned champions in Tristana, Lilia, Shyvana, Ashe. Obviously, we know that the Lilia Shyvana is absolutely targeted every week at Swoko. He has yet to be able to play one of those two champions, and those 50% bans just come straight from those matches. But tell me about these ADC bans. We have Tristana and Ashe. Why are these banned every single week?
I don't know, because to me, they don't scream, especially as somebody that plays a lot of solo queue. I don't really see them getting played a ton, or they're getting played often, but they're definitely not carrying my games, right? They're not the kind of champion that's going to take over a game, in my experience. Now, not as much as any other mid-game focused AD carry. Now, obviously, Ashe provides a lot of utility, so you get a lot of agency there. They'll get to start their own gank, start their own team fight. So if you trust your AD carry to do that, that's fine too. So I'm assuming, and I'm seeing this from chat as well, that the Tristana bans are very, very targeted against Big Bad Hand.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe so. He, in fact, I think he made some comments in the Discord. He's like, I just want to play my jumpy ADC.
My jumpy ADC.
He wants to be able to hop around. And yeah, his, from what I've seen, he likes to play the ADCs that are hyper mobile. He wants to be able to play the Tristana, Lucian, Vayne. Those tend to be the ones that he leans towards. And Tristana, one of those champions that really can fit a lot of different roles. I think that Tristana is very underrated, but as far as like competitive play, but for tier two, Tristana is great for tower sieging. Like, you can really clear towers very, very quickly. You have a lot of really great wave clear. So into a team that's doing something like a 1-3-1, or are really just trying to force down mid and siege, you have some solid wave clear for the mid lane that work really, really well. She also functions as a really great carry because of the resets. So if you have some sort of dive comp, you're running something like a Vi, a Malphite, anything that has easy access to the back line, if Tristana's on a flank as well, she can leap in, you know, get the bomb explosion, get the kill. And with every kill, she just resets her hop and she just keeps hopping around and staying very mobile in a fight. So mm-hmm. definitely a champion that can get out of control. And I agree with you on the Ashe. Ashe really fills that role that teams need in some sort of engage tool. And if you aren't getting your engage tool from your support, which we haven't seen engage supports this year, as you called out earlier, we're not seeing the Nautilus very much. We're not seeing Leona. We're seeing Vel'Koz, Zyra have a lot of picks. We're seeing, I think, Seraphine a few times, and we saw an Enchanter in the Karma as well. So the engage tool is going then to either top lane, but then you have like Garen's being played there. You have mid lanes, which are going to be assassins from Jubilus. You've also got Kayle and Mordekaiser coming from Slipstream and Malzahar, Vhagar from Nyxus and Lux. You have these picks. Where's your engage coming from? It's either got to be from your jungle, or you can slot in this Ashe to try to serve that purpose as well. So I really like that adaptation that teams are making, and this ban is, I think, is reasonable.
There you go. Yeah, I think so too.
All right, so let's talk about this matchup. So I did go back and watch this one a little bit today. Mm-hmm. We're not going to spend a terrible amount of time. So let's say about, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes talking about Porosnax and Triforce Tryhards. This was our match to conclude week number 3 for Tier 2. And what you can see in the middle there is their previous team comps. You know, coming into this match, two games of Garen, two games of Kayle from Porosnax. Mm-hmm. Different ADC support and jungle picks, and over there on the side of Triforce Tryhards, they haven't repeated a single pick in any of their games. if I look at it, they've not had the same draft at all. So kind of interesting coming in to this, but just looking at, you know, champ select and draft and things, what do you think? I know you got some notes on this one.
Yeah, so obviously I've taken this one, looked at this one quite a bit. For one, we kind of mentioned it earlier, but I am stepping in to help coach Triforce Tryhards through the last little bit of their season. So I'll be looking a little bit more at their comps as we go through. One, I know in a previous episode that we've talked about, one of the like easiest things for us to put in our checklist is consistent and varied damage sources, especially at a competitive level where you're probably going to see some relatively standard team comps. Probably not going to see a team of full assassins or full damage across the board. We're going to see a lot of bruisers. We're going to see a lot of tanks. And so when I look at this, I give, you know, an A+ to Porosnax for their varied damage, and like a C+ to Triforce Tryhards for theirs. I will say that they still have their beefiness. They've got their Jarvan and they've got their Malphite. So they're going to be relatively tanky. But Triforce Tryhards is running Zed mid lane, a tank top, kind of a bruisery depending on the build. I know some people will go burst Jarvan, but not everybody in the jungle. Then a Draven bot lane and that Zyra support that we were talking about earlier. So I personally am not a fan of putting all of your AP damage on your support, who is going to be gold starved. And even if they are Zyra, who we just talked about, still being able to pump out a ton of damage, that's just a lot of faith you're putting in on that bot lane to get ahead, which in this case isn't a bad idea. We do see that Merlin in particular is leading the stats for AD carry. So you kind of assume that their bot lane is going to be relatively strong. But yeah, not a ton of varied damage sources here.
Yeah.
My first thought as soon as I looked at it.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, running the Zed and the Draven, who are going to be running flat pin or flat lethality. They've got to stay ahead of the curve of the game. So as with this durability patch and armor scaling increasing and, you know, all that, they've got to get their kills early and got to get their lethality early and stay ahead of everybody's durability scaling because of the most recent patch. And unfortunately for them, that didn't happen. And that was one of the reasons why they fell behind. And the thing with Porosnax too is they are content each week to run this 1-3-1. Mm-hmm. And you know, you see Coach Magros just sitting in a side lane, drawing a lot of pressure. This most recent week, he was able to join in. He joined in for a dragon fight. And he only got that window to do that. And it was a really, really good play. He had the wave shoved all the way to tier two. Black Beetle on the Malphite burnt teleport to try to protect that tower. And that gave Coach Magros the window to be able to recall and then head to that dragon fight, knowing that Malphite was never going to be able to join and turn that fight into a 5v4. Now, I have some other things we could say about that fight. I think Triforce Shards missed a window, but it was a really well played from Coach Magros, using that pressure, pushing in the top, and then able to say, okay, got a TP out. There's no way he's going to join this unless he completely abandons that wave. And Coach Magros is ahead on the rotation, is able to pull it off. But yeah, I think the Draven Zed, I don't dislike the picks. It's just very conditional. And if you don't get ahead, you're kind of just sitting around saying, okay, I don't know what we do now, because you don't really have solid wave clear out of that, right? Yeah. Because once you go into the 1-3-1, what are you going to do when you know Poro Snacks is going to play like that?
And so I think the Draven pick is really interesting. When you see it, right? Like when you see Draven, you know immediately, okay, that bot lane is going to try and be aggressive. They're going to try and get kills. Like that's the stereotypical Draven play. In your face, fighting constantly, make use of the passive. Make sure that you are getting that extra gold on a kill. Draven's passive, by the way, you get a stack or two for every CS that you get and every axe that you catch. And then you get to cash that in for extra gold on a kill. And so he's a very snowbally champ, which on paper fits a very aggressive, damage heavy bot laner like Zyra. But I think especially with going into the Ashe and Karma, those are going to be two very easy to disengage with champions, right? You're not really going to have a ton of long drawn out fights where they're going to be in the thick of it. If it's going to be long and drawn out and they feel like they're losing, it's very easy for Karma and Ashe to escape. You've got your AoE slow with your Ashe. You've got your shield and your boost with your Karma, as well as your AoE slow if they land their Q. So this is probably one of the few times where maybe not necessarily fitting into the season's meta, but if you're going to go Draven, I would go and engage support, right? Something where you can get yourself on top of that Ashe or on top of that Karma really easily. A Nautilus, a Leona, something like that. Maybe an Alistar. So I don't mind the Draven, like you said. It can definitely pay off in big ways, but I would have liked to see some more engage out of the bot lane to make it work.
Yeah, especially into two immobile champions on the other side, right? Into an Ashe and a Karma. Ashe is very exploitable with, you know, she has no dash. She doesn't even have the movement speed increase like Miss Fortune would have. The Karma can assist in that. But if you ever find yourself in a position, and they did, I'll say this. So Triforce Shards, they ended up having an item advantage on the Draven. Draven was able to get a recall in, get back to lane, and Ashe had yet to recall and buy. So there was an item advantage on Triforce side and versus Poro Snacks, and they weren't able to get the fight going. But had they been able to get the fight, you already had the serrated Dirk on the Draven. 100% they win that fight. Like there's no doubt in my mind they win that. But then that ended up translating, and this is kind of where the game kind of got out of Triforce Tryhard's hands, I feel like, is at the beginning of that very first Drake fight, which is really unfortunate, because up until that point, the game was pretty even. And then it ballooned into like a 2,000 gold lead, I think, for Poro Snacks.
Are we talking about that dragon fight at like 8 minutes?
Yeah, that very first dragon fight. It looked like a little bit of miscommunication from Triforce Tryhard's side. They actually they had three members there. Poro Snacks had four. And as Merlin was roaming up from the bot lane, he stopped to clear a ward in the river. And Poro Snacks just jumped on it. Yeah. And it was that really that snap engage from the Diana just really destroyed that fight. So by the time Merlin could get into it, he nearly took out Carterra. I think she lived with sub 100 HP. And his ult went just a little wide. She ended up flashing, but he still almost got it. That ended up kind of swinging that pendulum inside of Poro Snacks, unfortunately. So they capitalized on the numbers advantage, and then things kind of got way out of control from there.
Yeah, and like you said, it did end up in a gold advantage. I think when I was looking at it beforehand, it actually, a few seconds after that fight, when everybody's disengaging and going back to their lanes and backing, it ends up being a 3K gold lead. So it's definitely a nice swing for them. But yeah, like you said, I know the one thing that I noticed about that fight is if you want to take that 4v4, that is okay. They have a very small gold lead on the other side, et cetera. You can probably still take that, especially with how strong Draven and Jarvan are early game. Yeah, I mean, when it's a 3v4, it's very difficult, especially on a champ like Diana, which is just, like you said, a very snap engage. What ends up happening is, like you said, they realize their opportunity, Porosnax does, and they immediately blow up the Zyra. And so it's a 3v4 leading up to it because Merlin's down bot, and then it stays a 3v4 for the rest of that fight because poor Dave got blown up so early.
And, you know, these are things that happen with teams that have just recently been put together, right? Yeah. And fortunately for everybody, regular season doesn't even matter.
Oh, yeah.
Because
everybody makes playoffs. It's all the stuff that you get to work on as you go through. The same thing with the team comps. I know Pac-Man Monarch said that earlier in Twitch chat. They're saying, you know, this is what the regular season is for. Playing new champs, testing new strats out, stuff like that. So definitely have time to work that out before we get into crunch time. So,
yeah. And I do like what Triforce iHearts did. It's not that I dislike the draft, but it does put them in a tough spot where they have to get ahead early. They have to stay ahead of the curve because of the flat lethality coming out of those two champions and the lack of, you know, strong diversified damage. Now, other on the side of Porosnax, we can talk about them for a little bit. Their strategy is the 1-3-1. Mm-hmm. So what do teams have to do? You know, they went undefeated through the first round robin. They knocked out this game versus Triforce Tryhards. What do teams need to do to combat this? And I guess the secondary question is Porosnax a one-dimensional team?
Ooh. I don't want to say they're one-dimensional.
Spicy questions.
I don't want to say they're one-dimensional. Like we said, it's only been three games. So right. If it's working, it's working, you know? I would love to see a team ban out the Garen just to see what they decide to break out in comparison. I mean, it's easy to split push on a lot of top champions. So, but it'd be interesting to see the success rates. If teams want to try and counter this, I would suggest, because I know I haven't said anything particularly nice about Triforce Tryhards drafting. The one thing that I think they did super well or set themselves up for, if you know you're going to have a Garen split pushing top lane, pick something to counter that, maybe not necessarily in the 1v1, but to counter the strategy. So I love the Malphite pick here, because what you can do is, you know that as Malphite, you're never going to beat that lane. You're never going to go up in CS advantage. You're probably not going to solo kill the Garen at all. But what you can do is be incredibly useful with your ult and roam to kind of crush the 1-3-1, right? If they're split pushing 1-3-1, you have a heavy engaged champion top lane. Right. So let them set up their 1-3-1 and then rotate that Malphite to another lane, initiate the fight and see if you can get some added benefit out of there. So for all of our other teams interested in potentially countering the Porosnax 1-3-1, do something similar. Right. Grab the Malphite. Go for it.
Yeah. So. What I'm waiting for is for some of these other teams to adapt to Porosnax's 1-3-1. And they say, psych, we're playing a team fight comp this week. And then they just bust out nothing but a bunch of huge AOE abilities. So they can, you know, flip the script. And so it's good on their part to, as long as it's successful, just stick with it. Like, you don't have to show your whole hand.
Oh, yeah.
Right. As long as it's working, we know we can fall back on this comp, you know, and we're going to find success because we can play it so well. And then if draft, you know, seems to be like, oh no, we're not gonna be able to pull that off well, well then we can pull out this thing we've been working on behind the scenes this entire time. So I only said that question there just to be controversial. But yeah, I agree with you. I think teams need to look at this, and as they see Porosnax's draft start to drift towards this again, then you've got to have a strong wave clear presence to be able to match it. And then you try to also match with a lot of hard engage tools, which Triforce Tryhards had, right? You've got the Jarvan that can hard engage. So if Porosnax is splitting the 1-3-1 and you feel like your three is stronger than their three, then you can force the engage on them and wipe their three as long as your other two members are able to hold their own. You don't have to kill the split pusher. You just have to keep the split pusher from getting something. And that's what Malphite can do. I mean, he can, you know, wave, you know, he can clear the wave. He can poke down the Garen if he can just hold that line. The problem was he was never able to leave lane. He couldn't shove the lane out enough in order to get those roaming windows because Garen could just spin through the wave. And if Malphite tries to, then Garen's just kind of, you know, kind of eat him up. So, yeah, so we'll see what happens. We'll see what teams bring out in the second round robin, and we'll see if Porosnax continues their undefeated streak going into week number four. Before we go, we'll take a look at the stat. Before we go into tier one, take a look at the final stats. Of course, Swoko having a monster performance on the Diana, going 11-0-5. Carterra, 14 assists along with Coach Mustang. So that kill participation, 75% for both of them. So that bot lane, not a ton of damage that they're pumping out as far as like kills, right? A lot of the kills are in Swoko's back pocket, but, you know, being that facilitating bot lane, playing a little bit of a different style, that Ashe being able to, as a secondary, engage with the Diana, and then the Karma to keep everybody alive. And enchanters are busted this patch. I think everybody, as you saw in your match.
Oh, yeah. 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 Enchanters are busted, unfortunately. Probably my least favorite meta, but it's at least we're spicing it up a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
I do think on the side of Triforce Tryhards, we talked about this early. I hadn't looked at this slide yet, so I didn't know. But yeah, we who's doing the most damage?
Zyra. Yeah.
Zyra. So despite them being behind and despite me kind of criticizing and saying they probably should have gone another support, clearly it was working out, right? Because they were definitely pumping out some damage. So yeah, you can definitely, if you're interested in that, you can take a look at this and kind of see how successful that is at that role. So.
Yeah, and just congratulations to Porosnax. Once they had a control of that game, you can see the gold kind of spike there right at that 8-minute mark, that really steep incline, and then they never really let that gold lead go. Kudos to them. Let's get into Tier 1. So our Tier 1 standings, we had some really spicy play last week. We do have one more match from Week 3 that has not been played yet. That's going to be between Straight Outta Grompton and Bards of a Feather, which I'm really interested to see.
Yeah.
But Team Eclipse and Let Us Win. We have a tie for first place right now. Both teams sitting at 2-1. Our stat leaders for Tier 1, Pathfinder coming in now with 7 solo kills. He was not the solo kill leader going into last week, by the way. That belonged to someone else I know. But now he is at 7 solo kills, a 75% average kill participation across. That's an average across all of his games. So I think it's fair to say that for Team Eclipse, Pathfinder is an enabler for their damage and their fights. Like, if a lot of fights don't happen unless he's there, right?
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I know that it's easy just to kind of say that Team Eclipse just plays through Pathfinder, but he enables, like you said, he enables his team as well to go through with that. Those aren't just solo kills. That isn't just his team funneling him constantly. He is creating opportunities, not just for himself, but for his team to kind of push their leads and make sure that they're getting their damage and their gold in as well.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, looking across at the other players here, we do have Dose from Straight Outta Grompton. Every team is represented, so we do like to see that. But Dose in the jungle with 92% kill participation. So he's kind of like the Pathfinder of Straight Outta Grompton, or Pathfinder is the Dose for Team Eclipse. But these two players, man, just a astronomically high kill participation. And this is, again, this is across 3 weeks. Well, Dose is across 2 weeks, but we'll see what happens with week three. Sohn's still holding it down in the mid lane. 5 out of the 7 stats there. 4 solo kills for himself. I believe he rocked the Victor 2 weeks in a row, which is, you know, incredibly good scaling. He's going to do massive amounts of damage. But for a mid laner, nearly 40% of his team's damage. That is absolutely crazy, especially when you consider that you have a top laner for that team that tends to play damage carries as well. Yeah. So they have three different players on their team that go damage, and he's more than a third of the damage for his team.
Yeah, it's particularly impressive, I think, as well, just to consider this is tier one. So a little less rank discrepancy.
I think I just lost Lucas. I think his internet just went out. His webcam is frozen. So we're gonna keep going. We're gonna assume that he had a really good point to make there. We'll get him back here in a minute. So we'll just keep going through Dixisions. The star of the bot lane right now from week to week. Lucas just messaged me and says Cat is the problem. So he'll get that fixed and he'll be back joining us here in just a second. But 27.84 average damage percentage, but a 7.66 average CS per minute. So he's topping the charts at CS per minute and translating that into about a 16 point average CS differential at 10. That means by the 10 minute mark of every single game, on average, he's at least 10, about 16 CS ahead. That translates over to about a kill. So he's got about a kill gold lead just in CS. And that doesn't count the kills that he may have accrued during that time. And then in the support role, we have Sups9 with still holding down the vision game, and 80 is his average vision score across three games, a 2.37 average vision score per minute. And he is holding that vision score differential down and positive at a 0.21. And we have Lucas back. Welcome back. Blamed it on the cat, huh?
It was literally my cat. She's being a little needy because it's getting close to dinner time. And of course, that means she's hopping on top of whatever is holding my attention right now. And I could have sworn like 2 weeks ago, I changed it so that my power button, which is on the top of my computer, doesn't turn my computer off whenever it's on. And last night and today, she has jumped on top of my computer and shown me that that is not the case. I did not turn those settings on. So,
Well, now you have something to do.
There we go. Yeah.
So I've already talked about all five players a little bit. Are there any players that you wanted to kind of shout out here while we're still on the slot?
Nah, I think we're good.
All right. Well, let's move on to here are the, well, we have the, I have the pick band stats in here for this league as well. I'm pretty sure that I did. Oh man. I don't know if I don't think my stuff is updating correctly, but either way, Mordekaiser sitting at like a 75% ban rate, I think, for tier one. Let me pull up the champion data. Yeah, I'm sorry. Mordekaiser's at a 60% ban rate. The highest pick champion for tier one is Thresh. Mordekaiser, again, the most banned at 60%. We have a whole slew of champions at 100% win rate. So we're not going to go through all those like 16 different champions because this league does not like to pick the same champion twice. but we did see the Belveth get broken out by Dose. And so I'm interested to see if any other team is going to pick up the Belveth. Is that something that y'all have explored and talked about?
No.
And even if you had, you probably wouldn't tell me.
It's one of those things where we've tried it out just to see. But for the most part, we're just kind of focusing on some other things.
Okay. All right. So, I like it. You know,
keeping it vague, close to chest.
I like that. Okay.
This was actually all an elaborate ruse. We're going to bust it out in our next game. So everybody be sure to ban Belveth.
Yeah. Everybody just ban it. Just ban it.
Just ban it.
Oh, perfect. All right. So let's get into the one matchup we had because one of our matches got rescheduled. Our Straight Outta Grompton Bards of a Feather match is going to be played, to my knowledge, this coming Thursday. We should have three games being played this Thursday, if I'm not mistaken. So that should be really interesting. But this was the matchup we had this past Thursday night. I had the privilege of being able to cast this alongside Slipstream. And Holy moly. Okay, so the missed ban on the left side for mid lane for Team Eclipse was the Kayle. So Team Eclipse came into this with Mordekaiser, Ivern, Kayle, Tristana, Soraka as their team comp. And then Let Us Win on the other side. We had Olaf in the top lane, Viego in the jungle, Anivia mid, and then Caitlyn Thresh rounding out the bot lane. If anybody did not believe that Enchanters are absolutely cracked on this patch, you need to watch this game and see how those kind of mid to late game T fights turn around for Team Eclipse. Because man, it was so frustrating to watch. I know y'all were tilted.
I meant to go back and see what the gold differential was at one of the very specific ones that I'm thinking of. It can have been too much. It was obviously a bit because Mordekaiser just kind of ran me over. But there was a dragon fight, or a fight near dragon, where we had a good duel. Viego is, successfully 1v1ing the Mordekaiser in the middle of the ult. Mordekaiser pops the stopwatch to make sure they survive, come out of ult at probably less than 300 HP. And next thing you know, he's probably at about 1500 and we're all dead because of the Soraka right next to them. So,
and Caspi is a support player that tends to gravitate towards Enchanters. Mm-hmm. Playing the Soraka, we'll play the Seraphine. Y'all opted to ban the Lulu instead mm-hmm. of the Soraka. So what is the reasoning there? You see Lulu as more of a... that would more kind of counter what y'all are trying to do, and so you maybe felt like you could deal with the Soraka?
Yeah, so surprisingly, Olaf pairs well with Viego for a lot of burst. And so in our minds, we were thinking, okay, we know that the Mordekaiser is going to be wreaking havoc, so our goal is probably going to be to want to burst somebody to make that fight a 5v4 as early as possible. And while Soraka offers consistent heals, Lulu is much better at the mitigating burst. Mm-hmm. It's a large jump in experience or in health with one cast, as well as the polymorph and the knockup from the ult itself. So just a trade-off.
yeah, for sure. It kind of puts you in a tough spot, too, because there are so many Enchanters right now. Mm-hmm. And I will say this. Even if you banned the Seraphine, Lulu, and Soraka, he'll likely just play Sona. So you still have another one that he can play. So if you really want to get rid of all those Enchanters, you don't really have enough bans in either phase to be able to take them all out. You're going to face one of them right. for sure. So we take a look at the way the gold kind of worked here on the right side of your screen here. Definitely a lot of back and forth across mm-hmm. this game. Up to that 10-minute mark, you know, both teams kind of struggling back and forth, exchanging leads. Let Us Win had a pretty, I'd say a 2,500 gold lead there, right mm-hmm. at about the 18-minute mark. And that's when things kind of swung and all those Enchanters really kind of came online. That was before the Baron because Baron came afterwards. But I thought y'all turned it back around at the Baron fight, man,
right.
Casting this, I'm gonna be a little critical. I thought they were absolutely trolling at the Baron fight. Like you've got Kayle's tanking the Baron from behind the Baron. You take more damage from Baron's butt than you do from Baron's face. Mm-hmm. So you don't want anybody sitting behind the Baron if you can help it. If you do have anybody sitting behind the Baron, it needs to be somebody that's tanky, that's maybe trying to run some sort of diversion or like kind of block the enemy jungler from coming in. Kayle ain't going to do that. So Kayle's sitting in the back of the pit. They secure Baron. Dexcisions walks up as Tristan is like, hey, I see three people. Rocket jumps 1v3, gets blown up and loses his Baron buff. I'm like, what are they doing? What are they doing? They just threw the game back into Let Us Win's hands. And then the next team fight, they just absolutely mopped the floor with y'all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we there were some interesting comms around that moment. I'll say that.
I like the Anivia pick, and I mentioned this in Champ mm-hmm. Select 2. I almost felt like there was a really cool chess match going back and forth between the teams in Champ Select. You know, Mordekaiser is locked in first. Okay, we answer that with Olaf because you can't be Death Realmed as Olaf. So like, okay, that's really cool. And then we bring in the Ivern Kale. We match the Kale with the Anivia from Less Wind. So we have some really good scaling, have some really good wave clear to try to stop the Kale from, you know, pushing too hard. The Caitlyn's locked in for Let Us Win. Well, then the Tristana's locked in for Team Eclipse to outrange the Caitlyn in the late game. So it was really cool, the back and forth here, because of the depth of the champion pools. So I really appreciated seeing that from an analytical standpoint. I thought it was awesome. But then once you pair the Ivern with the Kale, with the Soraka, and then we take a look at the damage charts, and Mordekaiser over 30,000 damage across the game. Kale didn't even get to the point where she could really do a lot. She was only level 14. She hadn't even hit level 16 yet. And they need to hit level 16 on the Kale. They end the game in 26 minutes. I don't think this is the fastest game of Tier 1, but it really seemed like all of a sudden their team comp just came online and they just rolled through you.
Yeah. And I think that was a combination of a couple things. Mordekaiser is very, very strong mid game. Once he hits two items, he's going to be a force to reckon with. So the faster he gets there, the stronger he's going to be, obviously. And then you just have two champions who are very good at enabling him. You have Ivern and you have Soraka, not to mention the Kale ultimate anytime anything got particularly spicy. So it was honestly a very good draft. I will say that I feel pretty comfortable saying that these two teams probably have the two best drafting minds in Tier 1. I don't know if that's a hot take or not, but Pathfinder and Will Win both do a really great job from what I've seen. I've seen some of Pathfinder's documents for drafts before, both for coaching his team in Tier 2 as well as his team for Tier 1. And they are very intensive, very well thought out, etc. And then we've got Will Win, who's just has a great mind for the game. So it's always interesting offering different picks, especially from our perspective, and then kind of hearing why that would fit in well or why that wouldn't fit in well, kind of fitting into the vision of what Will sees. So, it was just a really good team comp to do what you said. Like, it was very close up until about, I would say, the 20-minute mark, and then that's when their team comp just kind of made it very difficult for us to get into the game.
Yeah, and you've even got Grievous on two different players, right? You've got it on the Anivia, and you have it on the Viego as well. Now, it is just the initial component, so I think they nerfed it to, it's like it's 25% Grievous wounds until you upgrade the full item. But even still, it didn't seem like y'all were able to do enough to really cut through it. So we'll see if this ends up becoming meta shifting for Tier 1, if other comps are gonna, or other teams are gonna try to do something like this, because I think this would work really well with an Olaf.
Oh yeah, I think enchanters in general are very good with a bulldozer, and so in this case you have two of them in the game. One was played a little bit better, but you've got the Mordekaiser and you got the Olaf. You have one team comp, which is very heavily focused on just solid mid game team fighting and damage, as well as crowd control. And that's what the Let Us Win. We don't have an enchanter bot. We have the Thresh, which is good at, enabling fights, picking these fights, providing a lot of, not just engage, but peel as well, versus the Soraka and the Ivern, Ivern is a bit of a unique pick, but definitely, kind of fits into that enchanter in the jungle as well.
Yeah, so a lot of pick potential on Let Us Win with the with the Thresh, with the Anivia. You know, and Anivia's damage is more bursty. She's not very, she doesn't want to necessarily get in the thick of a fight and is just raining down a ton of damage like Cassiopeia or a Ryze, something like that. Anivia is kind of like in and out. I'm going to get in where I'm going to get the frost, hit my E, and then bail out, wait for my cooldowns to come back up, and then I'm going to do some more damage again. And same thing with the Viego, short range stun, get into the thick of the fight. But again, mostly picks, but you couldn't really pick anybody because of how much sustain they have. They had so much protection there. And even if you do try to pick somebody, you have the Kale to be able to drop the ult down. You have shields from the Ivern. You've got the W shield that comes through from the Mordekaiser, the heals from the Soraka, and then Tristana stays relatively safe as well with the rocket jump out of it. So definitely a tough team comp to play through. Mm-hmm. Even though I like the chess match back and forth, when you look at it after that, it's like, okay, it was almost like you had answers for individual champions, but not answers for the team as a whole.
Yes. Yeah. And I think part of that was the reliance on the Grievous Wounds, which I will make one comment about. If we look at probably what I would consider the pivotal team fight, which is right around that 22 and a half minute mark, that is when Let Us Win gets a pick on Mordekaiser, which unfortunately is not the greatest champion to get a pick on, mostly because at this point he has a fully completed Zhonya's as well as his ult. So he makes a 3v1 or a 4v1 into a 1v1 very quickly. Mm-hmm. And so Let Us Win picks the Mordekaiser, who pulls Viego into the Death Realm. They have a very close fight where he kind of pops his Zhonya's to make sure he escapes. I can't see exactly what his health is at, but he's at maybe 3 completed bars, which I think is 100 HP.
100,
so yeah. We're looking at 3 to 400 HP. As soon as he comes out, he's surrounded by Let Us Win, and he immediately goes up to about half health.
Wow.
And the most important thing to keep in mind here is that at this moment, which is probably the most important team fight in the game, there's no Grievous Wounds on Let Us Win. We pick that up later. So there's no orb on Anivia. There's no executioners on anybody else or anything like that. So that team fight in that game might go a little differently if we have just a little bit of Grievous Wounds on somebody at that point.
Yeah, but it just feels bad to buy Grievous Wounds.
Oh, yeah. It's a very... You're buying it specifically for the passive. It offers very little stat increase. So yeah, it's just not ideal.
All right, well, before we go, we do have some listener responses, so we're going to wrap things up wanting to hear from you. And Lucas, I do apologize that I was trying to get my form sharing done correctly, and I don't know that it did. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to share these with you. So you're mostly probably just going to be reacting to them.
Oh, good. Okay, I got this.
So the question we asked our listeners this week is, what champion has yet to be played in Coach Rivals Summer 2022 that you're hoping will eventually be picked and why? And as a bonus, who would you want to play that champion? So I like this question. I'm going to read through some of these responses. I'll let you think of maybe your answer there. Here we go. First one's from Ronnie B. out of Houston, Texas. Say, I'd love to see Uxion at some point. I remember how broken everyone thought he was initially, but now you don't hear much about the champion in general. Bonus, I'd like to see it on Big Jubs, Jubulus, Big Jubes. I don't know how y'all pronounce that, but he's a little biased. I will say this. I know of a tier one player that is very interested in playing Uxion. I will not say who it is.
Oh, okay. You're not going to do my scouting for me?
But I know there is one. I know there is one that is extremely interested in playing Uxion. So you might see that this Thursday, Ronnie. You might get your wish.
There you go.
Next, we do have Coach Magros, or Mike, out of Dallas, Texas. he says Sion. He's the one that played Sion a ton last year. He said he used to be one of the premier tanks that could split push. I played him a ton during CRC season 2021, but he has been nerfed into irrelevance. I would love to see Riot give him some love before the end of the season so I can bring back the undead juggernaut. Since the outlook for Sion is not so good, I was looking to open the gates with a sexy Susan in the top lane, which is more likely going to happen. Okay, so we already have some tier two scouting. He's giving it to the world. He doesn't want to play Garen anymore. He wants to play Nasus.
There we go. I feel like we have a caster who's very interested in seeing Coach Magros pick Sion. But I don't. Who
it could that? Be Danielle. I don't know, because it could be any of the other Team Tragedy players, but Sion would be... I still like Sion. I think he's still pretty solid. Maybe not the best pick right now, but could be pretty good. We have Eric29 out of Mississippi saying he wants Yumi to be picked, and he wants Yumi to be picked by Drake Prime or Sones. For the record, this is not what Eric said, but Drake Prime is currently playing top lane and Sones is playing mid lane. So I really don't think we're going to see either one of them on Yuumi. But he says Drake and Sones are the prime candidates for this champ with their Giga Chad 1v9 playstyle, Faker level mechanics, and encyclopedic game knowledge. And what better champ could represent that than a cat with a book? That's terrible. Oh, Lord. Anytime we have Eric on cast in a Sones game, he spends 60% of the time not casting, but flaming Sones.
There you go. It's... it makes sense. You know, you got the regional rivalry there. They've known each other for a while. I probably wouldn't be able to avoid it either.
We have Key Kitty Key out of New Mexico. Puts Zeri, yes, this is a good response. Zeri, Ginga Riffith has been posting constantly about it and is stomping solo queue. And I've joined in this chat. Have you seen his posts in Discord
about Zeri
gameplay? Okay, so you got to go to the highlights and bloopers channel. Ginga Riffith is constantly posting Zeri highlights where he's blowing people up with the W. Going in, there was one game he posted a clip, got 2 quadra kills in the same game. And we haven't seen it broken out in CR yet. I don't think it's been banned against him. So I'm interested to see if we're going to see the Zeri come out at some point, but definitely Ginga Riffith would be the one to break it out for sure. Moving on. Next, response number 5 is from Micah Smith. That's Happily Zerg out of Kansas. Says, Fiora, she is the ultimate Chad 1v1 champion. Hey, top lane. You know, he issues a challenge here. Hey, top laners, you won't. So the gauntlet has been thrown there, Lucas. Do we see a Fiora in your future?
You know that I love Fiora.
I do.
But I actually have a different pick for myself that I will reveal later.
Oh, so okay.
As soon as we're done with our listener responses, I've got 2 answers for you.
Awesome. And Fiora has actually been really, really strong in LCS. Mm-hmm. I've been picked a lot. Some of the LCS top laners have been blind picking Fiora, actually, which has been surprising. But with Sejuani finding a home in the top lane, Fiora's a really good response to that. Pathfinder chimes in to listener responses out of Texas. He's... He says he would love to see Yasuo be picked because he's a skill champion and he would love to see Pathfinder play it. So a little bit of bias there.
Just a bit.
He's been playing the Yone, so I think that's close enough. We don't need to see another Wind Brother on the Rift.
Yeah, he has played a bit of Yone, so...
Slipstream chimes in. Slipstream's out of California. Says he would love to see Teemo Jungle because nothing brings joy and laughter to spectators more than watching people attempt to path around where they think the mushrooms might be and then hit them anyway.
I don't know if the correct phrase there is joy and laughter. I don't, even for the spectators who may find it partially amusing for a little bit. I don't know if that's what Teemo inspires in most people. There's a reason he has a little devil skin.
That's true. It is definitely the bane of many League of Legends players' existence. That is, with the global taunt, everybody just wants to go and kill the little rat. We have a Big Bad Hand out of Arkansas. kind of hearkening back to our conversation earlier, he would like to see Tristana be played. He said, Big Bad Hand's Tristana has been, you know, he's talking in third person, has been banned every game. Shyvana Swoko, banned every game. Jubilus Yasuo, banned every game. Let's put together a community night where it's straight blind pick. Swoko took Shiv, and Jubilus took Yas to new levels during community nights, but no one has seen Big Bad Hand's Trist. Why are they banning it? That is verbatim what he typed.
I love the third person reaction. I think it really, really lends some credibility. We should all listen to this guy. I don't know who he is, but don't ban Big Bad Hands, Trisana.
And then our final listener response is coming from Mr. Hernandez Teaches. The state he is from is labeled as hot.
That's true.
That's Texas. True. And his champion is, says, since my hot boy Viego was already picked,
there you go,
I'm going to pick Yumi and Teemo. These champions are super strong in the current meta and will sweep any opponent. I want English teacher to take Teemo top because he needs the auto win champ. Will win plays Yumi for the big heels.
I don't know if that's flame or not. He says he needs the auto win champ. That kind of hurts.
So he wants you on Teemo, right, and will win on Yumi.
That's not going to happen. I would rather ban Teemo every game than play Teemo. Waste a ban on Teemo.
All right. Well, I'll give you my pick. I would love to see Tarek. I think Tarek is so busted right now. I've always thought Tarek to be really strong. Mm-hmm. I think he's been underrated for a long time, along with other picks like Zillion. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if a really good Tarek is scary, you get in there, if you can sync up your double auto attacks and weave in your casts of abilities between that, you're constantly getting increased attacks, 100% mm-hmm. attack speed increase on Tarek after you cast an ability. And with every auto attack, you lower the cooldown of other abilities. So if you get a double kill in the bot lane and you go to their tower, you heal, auto, auto, heal, auto, auto, heal, auto, auto. You just have your heal is permanently up. And so even if you did take a lot of damage in the 2v2, you heal your ADC all the way back up to full while you're trying to take tower plates, and you're just constantly back up bonking it with your hammer. It's insane. And you know, you have the AoE ultimate to provide a vulnerability for your team. We've already seen the Tarek one time. I believe it was the straight out of Grompton match with the Belveth. So my point is basically moot because Tarek has been played.
More Tarek.
Yeah, give me more. So I actually forgot that Tarek was picked, and I look at the stats every week. And so yeah, my bad. Lucas, hit us with your pick.
So I've actually got one. I've got two. They're both for my team. So number one, I'd love to see a throwback pick from last season. I'd love to see Will win on the Ezreal, which is slightly problematic now because he does play jungle. So
y'all can roll swap.
I don't know. We're good. But we can just play the Ezreal jungle. I think that's what's going to happen. So everybody look out for that. We need that consistent damage source out of there, and we'll go from there. However, my second pick, which is very legit, and for myself, is Yorick. So I would love to see English teacher bust out the Yorick in a game. It's such a unique pick. I enjoy it a ton. I have a really good win rate on it in solo queue. But Yorick takes a lot of things to go his way to win a game. Mm-hmm. We talked earlier about Coach Magros and Poro Snacks' 1-3-1 comp that they like to play. Or as Coach Mustang kind of brought up to us, they can also just play a 1-4 comp, your normal split push. And Yorick kind of thrives in that environment. So something really speaks to me about picking somebody who just lands on an island and just split pushes into oblivion and gets to the point where they can just 1v2 or 1v3 anybody that gets sent their way. That really speaks to me, especially after the victimization that I had to deal with last week. So
and his kit really is designed for it, right?
It's gorgeous.
More so, I would say more so than other champs, right? I mean, obviously Garen has he's got his Q to be able to run away. He's got his Q that does damage towers. He wave clears really well, but you can transition a Garen into team fighting if you have some champions that can enable him to get, you know, to the back line pretty easily. But Yorick, like, everything about his kit pretty much screams split pushing, specifically the ultimate.
Yeah, Yorick's job is to create favorable numbers for the rest of their team, right? Like, your goal as Yorick is to be a split pushing menace so that they can't only send one person. Their goal is to send two people to have to stop you, and so that your team can then fight the 4v3 on the other side of the map. He has a really, I don't know, he's a very fun kit in general. If nobody's ever tried him, I definitely try it out. There's a lot of fun skill expression that's available. Making sure that you always have your Mistwalkers up so that you can reliably do damage in your 1v1s and your 1v2s. Making sure that your lady never dies. You've heard me scream before, my lady! Because that cooldown is so long, it feels so bad when your Lady of the Mist perishes. But she provides you max health damage, max health percentage damage based on whatever target is being targeted by them. So you get a lot of that 1v1 damage out of the way. You get a little mini Jarvan ult on your W. It's just a fun character.
Look, and even when you hard push them under tower, he can harass them under tower. So without even taking tower damage, if he has enough ghouls and he connects with his E, the tower can only take out one ghoul at a time.
Oh yeah.
So if you've got four of them, they're bound to eat some damage, and the ghouls do a surprising amount.
They hit like a truck early game when you're not expecting it. It's great. That's my pick. I want English teacher to break out the Yorick.
Hey, that'd be a great pick. I would love to see English teacher break out the Yorick, or even some tier two teams break out the Yorick into Coach Magros. Oh, yeah. Or you know what? We'll probably even see Coach Magros play Yorick.
Here you go.
All right, so my throwing it out there.
My new goal is to get our top laner for Triforce Tryhards, who's Black Beetle, to pick up the Yorick. I think that's the answer here. Counter Coach Magros by Coach Magrosing harder.
You're revealing your team's strats.
You don't know if it's true or not. You don't know if it's true or not. So what you have to worry about is he's clearly just messing with us, right? He's clearly just trying to get us to think about this pick. But what if I actually pick it? What if you ignore it and then I bust out the Yorick? Or then my top laner for my tier two team busts out the Yorick? You're gonna really look a little foolish, huh?
So you're telling us we shouldn't ignore it.
Don't ignore it. Ban the Yorick.
You don't have to ban it, everybody. You don't have to ban it. Just find a way to deal with it. Let it be prepared. You don't have to ban it, but be prepared to pivot in draft and have an answer for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, here's a question. Here's the last one. How do you counter a Yorick?
You basically pick somebody. Do we want the actual? I was going to give you the actual answer. No.
Oh, well, hey, good on you.
No. We're good. We're good.
I was setting you up.
You pick Yorick by playing Teemo. Play Teemo in Yorick. There you go. And you counter Yorick.
There you go. Pick the most useless champion for a team and play it. That's phenomenal. I like it.
Oh, yeah.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Rift Happens. We are going to call it. That is it for the two of us. Be sure to tune in to the matches that we have this week. We have, I think we have one tier two match this Wednesday. I saw in chat that one of those got, pushed for a doubleheader next week. And I believe we have three tier one matches.
Woohoo!
This Thursday. Are you hearing that same thing? Or
yeah, we got lots of action coming up. We had some unfortunate weather conditions that knocked out some power in part of the country last week. So, sometimes you got to reschedule.
Yeah, I like it. Well, when we finish this, Lucas, I give you permission to go out there and take a dip in your pool that's back there behind you.
My pool. Thank you. Yes.
Thanks for showing
for anybody that didn't notice. I did move. Oh, look, don't ignore the bed that's floating over there. I did move, did look for a new place, managed to snag a really sweet spot with a pool. This definitely looks like some Mississippi architecture.
Awesome. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in. Season 2, episode 17. I'm Justin. That's Lucas. We'll catch you guys next Monday.